This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Wendy Johnson. She's medical director at La Familia Medical Clinic. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be here again.
Good to have you again. And we're talking today, because it is New Year's Eve, ladies and gentlemen, about New Year's resolutions. Many people make New Year's resolutions about their health. A lot of people go on diets. A lot of people start going to the gym. I saw on Facebook the other day, somebody said, I'm going to start a gym called Resolutions. It's it's open for the first 2 weeks as a gym, and then it turns into a bar.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, they make a lot of money.
But, you know, there's a lot of people, and particularly in Santa Fe, who are very concerned about their diet, and there's a kind of a new, I don't even want to say fad, because some of these are written by doctors and very scientifically thought out, but there's sort of new kind of this is the diet that's going to change your life and make you healthy kind of thing.
Right.
What, as a doctor, are your ideas about diet? One of the things that is a kind of meme is that doctors don't really learn about nutrition in medical school. And,
right.
You know, what's your take on diet?
Well, I think that's true. Doctors, Western allopathic trained physicians, don't learn that much about, especially of my generation. You know, I graduated from medical school a little more than, maybe about 30 years ago now. Oh my. So going on, yeah, it's about 25 years ago now. In that time we didn't get a lot of training in nutrition. I also think that we're learning a lot about nutrition. And so even if we are getting trained about nutrition, sometimes the scientific ways that we get trained about nutrition aren't super helpful when you're sitting in a room with a patient who's been eating one way all their life and you're trying to help them figure out how to change that. So I think there's a lot involved in thinking about diet and how we eat and how to change our habits. And some of it has to do with genetics, and some of it has to do with behavior patterns that have been built over, you know, in some cases over decades or even more than that, if it's a, you know, over generations of families. And then there's a scientific piece about what your body actually needs and how what your body needs to work in an optimal way. And so all that works together.
Let's talk about that scientific piece. What do we know for sure? I mean, okay, we can dispense with don't drink highly sugared sodas all day long.
Sure.
That kind
That's
of stuff.
That's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
So it's evolving, you know. I mean, most famously, again, Western medicine, and this is nutritionists as well, not just physicians, spend a lot of time telling people cholesterol is bad, have a low cholesterol diet, have a low fat diet. And the problem wasn't necessarily in that message, but the problem, I think, is in how that message got sort of seized upon by our capitalist economy to use that message to sell people, okay, low fat's bad, we'll sell you things that don't have any fat in them, they may have a lot of sugar in them, and we won't talk about that. So I think it's this kind of perfect storm of us, just a little bit of information can be a dangerous thing, and not having the full picture, the Western medicine kind of talking about this in a very authoritarian way, even though we really don't know the whole picture. And then the market kind of responding to that by selling us a bunch of things that capitalize on that, and people not knowing. So they're buying things that look healthy, that say they're healthy, but they're not. The more we learn about, I'm a big Michael Pollan fan. I think that he's got it going on in terms of, you know, what he says. And I think the more we learn about diet, the more we understand is that, you know, the diet that our ancestors ate was probably a good one. And when I say ancestors, I'm talking about 100, 200 years ago, where most people were agricultural based. Most people were eating what they grew or what their neighbors grew or what they killed or what, you know, they raised and killed. And it was, you know, largely plant-based, a little bit of meat, you know, some cultures did have more carbohydrates than others, but I
Yeah,
think a
like my
lower.
Italian ancestors.
Well, you'd be surprised though. I think that even, you know, I'm Italian as well, and pasta is kind of a not, you know, pasta is not Italian originally. Pasta is from China, right? So I think if you go back long enough, even in Italy, people weren't having that were I mean, there was probably a good amount of bread, but there was, you know, heavy on the plant-based foods.
Right.
So, and not processed.
Well, and that's the thing. I think when we talk about Michael Pollan saying one of the problems that we have in, especially in American society, where we don't even have a consistent food culture of any kind, except for capitalist food culture, which is not to be relied upon, we tend not to see things holistically. We tend to break things down. So, as you said, you know, oh, cholesterol is bad. So let's just think about cholesterol, as opposed to thinking about what's a whole meal? Like, what's a balanced meal?
And I think that's a danger we get into both in terms of the traditional Western medicine and traditional nutritionists and dietitian advice, and in terms of the kind of more alternative, you know, when we talk about superfoods and we talk about, okay, you know, the supplements that you need, and people going crazy over one or two supplements, and or over one or two kinds of foods, and you have to eat this kind of thing every day. You know, I think that's a danger. The pendulum can swing either way.
And it's also, I will give one small example from my own life. At some point years ago, somebody said to me, oh, spirulina, which is some kind of algae, I think, is so good for you and everybody should have spirulina. I had spirulina. It took me a while to figure out what was going on. It gave me clinical depression. Yeah. And I stopped eating it and I was happy again. And I started eating it and I felt like I wanted to jump off a bridge. And it was the spirulina, it wasn't my life. And to me, that, and there are so many examples like that from other people's lives, are illustrations of the fact that there is not necessarily one right thing for everybody.
I mean, I think that there is a huge genetic and historical component to this that we don't understand too. I think that food allergies and food sensitivities are a real thing, you know? And I think we don't really understand it. But that's what when I tell my patients, you know, if they're having abdominal problems and gut problems, you know, this is kind of a supplement, but it's probiotics, I think, are a great thing. I think it would be good if we ate more fermented foods and then we wouldn't necessarily need to have the probiotics. But I tell them that when they're struggling and they say, well, I have abdominal problems, when I eat certain things, I feel horrible. Well, don't eat those things. You know, I could do a test on you to see if you have celiac sprue, to see if you have a true gluten sensitivity, for example. But even if that test comes back negative, if there's certain things that you eat and you feel terrible, don't eat those things. I mean, it's like that old joke, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Well, don't do that, you
Yeah.
know?
Well, and that's the thing. If you have gluten sensitivity, whether you medically have it or not, the solution is the same.
Yeah, if you feel better for whatever reason eating a certain diet, as long as that diet is giving you the nutrients that you need and your not body needs to be healthy, you know, that's fine. As long and again, almost everybody eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, you
Right.
know, eat lean protein of some kind, vegetarian or non-vegetarian. And the rest is, you know, kind of gravy. And within that very general kind of prescription, you can find things that work for
Right.
you know?
Are you telling us to eat gravy?
I like gravy, but
We're talking to
let's talk
Wendy
with
jo
you.
We're talking to Wendy Johnson, medical director at La Familia Medical Clinic. Now, what about fasting? I've heard that it's best to fast when the weather is warm because in the cold weather it's harder on your system because you're kind of in like winter mode. Other people say, oh, it's the new year. It's a great time to start a fast or a cleanse. Do these things even make sense? Is it something that non-monks should do?
Well, I think again, you know, there's a lot of literature out there on fasting and not fasting. One interesting piece of data is that overall mortality rates, if you look at BMI, weight for height, amongst all different groups.
Body mass index.
Right, the body mass index. So if you look at all different groups and you look at the skinniest people and the most overweight people, the group that has the lowest mortality is the slightly overweight people.
Really?
Yeah. So we don't know why, but, you know, I think that that is not necessarily related to fasting, because you could be slightly overweight and still do an occasional fast. But I think that it's important to understand that this kind of idea that gets imposed on us by our kind of celebrity, everyone has to be beautiful and thin all the time culture, it's not necessarily healthy. It's certainly to be super thin. And even if you're a little bit overweight, if you're otherwise fit, the most important thing, I think, is how you're eating and are you exercising, you know? And any kind of exercise, getting exercise every day is so important for so many health conditions. You know, it makes you so, so much more healthy to be able to exercise. If exercise was a drug, it would be making millions, because it's more effective for so many diseases than some of the drugs that we have.
What diseases?
Well, diabetes, any kind of disease that's related, heart disease, diabetes, depression, mental illness, different kinds of mental illness, and even to keep you healthy. I mean, there's recent things that have come out that people who have exercised every day get fewer colds, they get fewer illnesses, you know, infectious disease illnesses, their immune systems are just generally more robust. So, you know, there's arthritis, different kinds of musculoskeletal illnesses, autoimmune illnesses, things like that. It's really great for almost everything.
There's kind of on the far other end of the exercise spectrum, there are people like professional athletes who put so much strain on their joints that as they get older, their joints are completely worn out.
Right. Yeah, I'm not really talking about that.
I think
very few of us are in danger of that problem. I personally am nowhere near in danger of that problem. But yeah, that's kind of a different problem. And, you know, but I think for most of us, we're far from there. And right. When I'm talking about exercise, I'm certainly there's a lot, especially for older people, to think about when they think about exercise. Because especially if people haven't exercised all their life and they want to start and they're older and they're, you know, maybe their balance isn't so great. Maybe their bones, or they have osteoporosis and their bones aren't as strong. There's certainly considerations. You know, one thing, I think Fort Marcy has like a pool aerobics thing that I think costs very little that you can go do. So swimming and being in a pool and do pool aerobics, that's a great thing for older people to do. Some of the machines, like bike machines, elliptical machines, they don't put a lot of stress. I used to row when I lived in Seattle. I love rowing. Rowing machine, if you can figure out how to use it and get someone to teach you really how to use it, that's an exercise you can really do all your life. It's good for building muscle and cardiovascular, and it doesn't put a lot of stress on your bones too. Yeah. Impact. But, you know, even people who run, you know, if you've been running all your life, running is great.
And exercises like yoga, which I was surprised. I had a friend years ago who was a yoga teacher who was really buff. And I said, so what else do you do besides yoga? She said, nothing. And I realized that if you take that particular exercise seriously, you can get in excellent shape.
Right. And I think the most important thing about both diet and exercise, as we're talking about bringing us back to this idea of resolutions, is that you have to do what works for you. And thinking that you're going to say, okay, on January 1st, I am going to completely turn my life upside down and do something I've never done before every single day is not realistic. And that's why your friend had the great idea with the gym. I mean, we all go to gyms in the beginning of January. We all see that they're super crowded. In the beginning of February, not so much. And so, you know, I think that the reason for that is we try to do too much. And it's really great if you can really think about your life and think about how you can incrementally start to incorporate some changes that'll work in your life. You know, if you have kids, if you have a 9-to-5 job, you know, working out every day at noon might not work for you, or working out every day at, you need to figure out, well, what can I realistically do? Going to the gym for 90 minutes a day isn't going to work, probably. But taking a 20-minute walk, getting up 20 minutes earlier, taking a 20-minute walk, you know, walking your dog for 20 minutes in the morning, even though it's cold, even though, you know, doing this one little thing like that that really works into your schedule can really be life-changing.
Have you ever made a resolution and kept it at New Year's?
You know, it's funny because I just happened, I was like going through old notes on my iPhone and I found my resolutions that I made last year and I didn't keep any of them. Really. I mean, I might have kept them for a little bit. So maybe I'm not the right one to be given advice here. But
I've never met anyone who's ever kept a resolution.
Yeah, long term. I mean, I have. I mean, people who have resolved to quit smoking or to quit some really bad habits. Yeah, for sure. But I think it's difficult. I mean, maybe it's too much pressure this time of year. You know, maybe we should have like July 1st resolutions or something like that, where nobody needs, they can be stealthy and nobody needs to know about it.
Right, right. Now, speaking of wintertime, some of us get colds and get one bug after another and get, you know, viral infections, occasional bacterial infections. And some people just sail through the winter without a cold, without a problem. What's going on? Why are we so different? I mean, many people who do get colds are people who eat well and stay in pretty good shape. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've taken every single herbal remedy that everybody's told me to take and
right.
drunk enough chicken soup to sink the Titanic, and it doesn't do any good.
Well, the only thing really proven scientifically to shorten the duration of a cold that I know about is zinc.
Not done
to
that
give you
too.
More advice that you don't need. But I think that you're on to something, and we certainly know we're learning more and more about how our immune systems get built when we're young. And so much of how your immune system is functioning when you're an adult depends on what viruses has your body seen and how your immune response has mounted. And we're learning more and more about diseases like asthma. And, you know, just this general kind of feeling that you're somebody who's more susceptible to cold go back to our history as a child. And again, they go back to diet. They go back to what things we might have eaten, how our gut microbiome was developed, how our entire microbiome was developed, and how our immune system developed in concert with that. Again, it's something that we know very little about, but I think that has a lot to do with it. I think that certainly we do know, we're talking about exercise and diet, that exercising every day and eating a good diet are things that you can do to make sure your immune system is operating optimally. But I know people, you know, like you were saying, that do all of that and just seem to always be sick. And then there's people like, you know, my dad was one of these people I never remember my dad even with a sniffle. And, you know, and he didn't necessarily exercise every day. I mean, he was, you know, he was okay. He did all right. He played a lot of golf, but he was not, you know, his diet was fine, but he wasn't some kind of health nut. So I think there's a lot we don't know about how to do it. The basic things that I would tell everybody this time of year is a couple of things. One, if you have small children, newborns in the house, things like that, especially, or elderly people who are more susceptible. One is, although this is controversial in Santa Fe, for sure, make sure everyone has some vaccines to some of the worst illnesses that can really affect those folks. I know the flu vaccine isn't 100% effective. I don't personally care if people get it or don't get it if you're not around small children or elderly, but I think if you are, you should get that. For elderly people, getting the pneumococcal vaccine is a good idea. And I think there's a pertussis vaccine. Pertussis is still a big problem, especially in New Mexico. And I think for people that are around newborns, they should make sure that their vaccines are up to date and that their kids' vaccines are up to date if there's small children or elderly in the house. Washing your hands frequently, that's an important thing this time of year. And I think, you know, just being aware about, you know, most colds are respiratory contact. So if people are coughing around you or if you're coughing, to just be aware that you're contagious and to kind of maybe don't go to work and get everybody sick, you know, take a sick day, things like that.
How do you stay healthy being around sick people all the time?
Well, you know, we at our clinic, because I'm a vector for disease, right? So I don't want to get my, not only do I not want to get sick, of course, but I don't want to get my frail patients sick, especially. So I do get vaccinated. I get the flu vaccine. I make sure that my other vaccines are up to date. Frequent hand washing, you know, that's the thing that we always stress in medicine before and after every patient, wash your hands. I think exercise and diet are an important thing. You know, another thing we did, I didn't mention, we don't really emphasize enough is sleep, especially this time of year when everyone's in stress and kind of the mental health burdens of this time of year for a lot of people also have a huge effect on your immune system. So whatever you can do to be good to yourself, I think, get enough sleep, have, you know, alone time or spend time with people you really care about. If your family stresses you out, you know, be cognizant of that and set some boundaries for yourself and set some time apart so that you can do stuff that nourishes you.
Wendy Johnson is medical director at La Familia Medical Clinic. Wishing you a happy new year, Wendy, and to all of our listeners.
Yeah, you too, Mary Charlotte. And here's hoping that we can at least keep one resolution this year.
Whatever that may be, thanks for
Right.
being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.